CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Two wars simultaneously, the new front in the Middle East, and responses to the terror attack of October 7th around the world. No more important reaction than from the Republic of India. And I'm very pleased to welcome Sadanand Dume of the American Enterprise Institute, writing for the Wall Street Journal editorial board, his column on the responses from Delhi, from Narendra Modi, the very popular and powerful prime minister of the BJP party that dominates Congress, and the puzzling response from the Congress party, once all-powerful in India, and now a puzzle. Sadanand, you are traveling. You are in Yokohama, Japan, but we speak of India immediately because the violence is not contained in any fashion. Hamas continues to be a threat to the people of Israel and to the peace of the Mediterranean basin. Mr. Modi, these last years, has been decidedly sympathetic and open to conversation and trade with Israel. His response, I read from your column, was immediate upon hearing the news. Deeply shocked by the news of the terrorist attacks in Israel, our thoughts and prayers are with the innocent victims and their families. We stand in solidarity with Israel at this difficult hour, end quote. Was there anything surprising or controversial about that remark? It seems straightforward. How was it received at home? Good evening to you.
Oh, very good evening, John. I think it was an excellent remark. It was completely unambiguous, as you said. It was, I think, surprising in the context of India's past Middle East diplomacy. There was no attempt to, as they say, both sides it. He just said very clearly on the day of the attack that this isn't, you know, effectively that this is an atrocity, and that he reacted like I believe all decent people around the world have reacted, which is, you know, to with out of sympathy for what has been inflicted upon Israel, the Israeli society, by the, if I may use the term, barbarians of Hamas. So there was no attempt to both sides. There was no attempt to be even-handed. There was no talk of root cause or anything else. And he just said that this was a terrorist outrage, and India was appalled.
And I follow your reporting. This is the surprising turn. Jairam Ramesh, a member of the parliament in charge of party communications for the Congress party, the minority party, put out this 24 hours later, that Congress, quote, condemns the brutal attacks on the people of Israel, but, quote, always believed that the legitimate aspirations of the Palestinian people for a life of self-respect, equality, and dignity must be fulfilled only through a process of dialogue and negotiations while ensuring the legitimate national security interests of the Israeli people. That's a long-winded but. Is that both sidism? Is that how that was heard in India?
Yeah, and I think that's much closer to the what has been the Indian position for roughly around 30 years or so, which is to have some, you know, which is to recognize Israel, but to not, but to also recognize and give a lot of attention to the Palestinian side of the argument. So that first response from Congress was more like you would, the traditional response you would expect from a left of center party.
Congress. The Congress party is made up of the inheritors of the all-powerful Congress, including its leading representative, Mr. Nehru, Nehru's grandson, I believe
great-grandson.
I've lost a generation. However, the world has moved on. Does Congress recognize that, Sadanand?
You know, I mean, one of the points I made in my column was that the de facto leader of Congress, Rahul Gandhi, the great-grandson of Jawaharlal Nehru, not only had nothing to say about this, right? He was not only did he not condemn Hamas, but he's been absolutely silent on this entire issue. And the day after the Congress party, or 2 days after the Congress party issued that, you know, statement, which was kind of both-sidesing it, in my view, they issued another statement. And in that statement, they said absolutely nothing about Israel, nothing about the terrorist attacks, nothing about Hamas. And they just basically argued, they basically made a statement completely about, you know, the rights of the Palestinians and so on. And the problem really there is that they seem to be thinking in terms purely of electoral politics. and attracting the votes of India's Muslims, which is a very large minority in India, about 200 million people, about 15% of the population. And they seem to not recognize that the threat of radical Islam is a serious problem that affects the stability of the region and the world. It's like they haven't woken up to the fact that this is a problem that's been around in some form for about 50 years. It's been very prominent in the world since 9/11, which was more than 20 years ago. But it feels as though the Congress Party is stuck in a time warp and, you know, still thinking, you know, it's 1969 or something.
It is a puzzle. The Congress Party is right now not in the news much. This, of course, puts it in the news. So what have they been doing developing these unusual positions from the 20th century? I understand they're the opposition, but what is their vision of the future if they make this detour into the past?
You know, John, this is a problem. I mean, I was writing about the Congress Party, but this is a larger problem, I would say, with, you know, many post-colonial parties, many people on the left, even in countries like the U.S., where they basically seem to get trapped in this mode of thinking where no matter how long the Israelis have been in Israel, no matter how, you know, what they've done, they're kind of constantly and, you know, tagged as being some kind of colonial oppressor. And no matter what atrocities Hamas commits, the Palestinians are always seen as the victim. And I think that's a really sort of dangerous way of looking at the world. We've seen that, I think, on college campuses in the U.S. too. The problem is that, you know, in a place like India, where the Congress, you know, this is the opposition party, it's very dangerous for a major political party to be espousing this view. And fortunately, we don't at least have that problem in the U.S.
I want to also address a column you wrote during the first week of the crisis, and it deserves great attention because it stands to be an issue that's going to go on for some years, which is the strange remark by Justin Trudeau on the floor of Parliament some days past, accusing or inferring the allegations against the Republic of India for an act of crime in British Columbia. Has there been an update on that? Because your column left it this way. If Canada can prove it, bring forth your evidence. If India can prove that it didn't do it, bring forth your evidence. Where do we stand on that allegation made by Justin Trudeau?
There's been no further progress, nothing else in the public domain that we know of. And just to sort of, you know, quickly backtrack for your listeners who haven't been following this, it was a really quite a dramatic announcement by Trudeau, because effectively what he was doing was that he accused the Indian government of being involved in the murder of a person described by the Indians as a Sikh separatist. It was a Canadian national in the suburbs of Vancouver. And the killing itself was quite dramatic. It was a kind of gangland-style murder where, you know, a couple of gunmen came up and they used a car to block this guy's car, and they shot him, and then they ran away and got away in a getaway car. And the Indians have responded with absolute outrage, because their view is that either Trudeau has the evidence or he doesn't. And if he doesn't have the evidence, he should not have spoken up in Parliament. And so this has really roiled India-Canada relations.
As it must, because G7, Canada has a privileged position to speak out like that. And India is the most populous and most important republic on the face of the earth. It was a puzzle to all of us, and I'm looking forward to more developments. Now, again, Trudeau was accusing India of an act of murder on his territory. Very strange. Did Congress pick up that echo in any fashion? Was there opportunism there for the politicos thinking of the vote?
No, because I think on this one, the overwhelming majority of Indians are on one side. And I think that Congress recognized that there was no kind of room for maneuver there for them. I think that the entire Indian, sort of both the ruling party and the opposition party, basically thought that the way Trudeau had reacted, the way he had behaved, it was irresponsible. And basically their position remains that he should show whatever evidence he has. It has to be in the public domain. He can't just say, trust me, bro. And the second thing is that there's a very strong view among Indians that their view was that Trudeau was not driven by the facts per se, that he was driven by his own political compulsions, specifically a need to appeal to the fairly substantial and well-organized Sikh vote right. in Canada. Now, we don't have all the facts. Now, it's possible that a few months from now, if we, you know, revisit this issue, John, maybe the Canadians do have very good evidence. And if they do have that evidence and that evidence is put out, I think then this sort of story would look different. But as of now, this is where we stand.
Sadanand Dume traveling. He is in Yokohama, Japan. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.